Hello and welcome to the Everything is Okay podcast. Guys, we have made it. It is 2021. I hope this year is already treating you better than last year. And guys, this year with this podcast, it is going to be one for the books. We have some amazing guests that we have already booked for this year, and we are working on some more that is going to throw this season over the top. And it starts today. If you have listened to this podcast for very long, most likely you have heard the music of the band O Jeremiah. They started out in Mississippi, now they are located in Athens, Georgia, and they are one amazing band, and more importantly than that, they are amazing people, amazing friends, and people that I love dearly. So without further ado, let's get into this episode with O Jeremiah.
Here with Jeremiah and Aaron Strickland. We have Brad Stair in the flesh in Hattiesburg, Mississippi.
Woo!
James Eisenhower and I just had ice baths for the first time in our lives, and I shivered.
What rigorous activity did you just do that warranted getting an ice bath for the first time?
Just the ice bath.
Just spiritual reasons, man.
No activity first.
Yeah.
Wait. So What was the conversation that led to, hey, do you want to take an ice bath with me?
Well, I held his hand.
I'm not familiar with your relationship, so I need context.
Let me tell you.
It's not the first kind of bathing we've chosen to do together. We had done a podcast with somebody who had talked about the benefits of doing ice baths, and so we decided to go out and try it out, and I think David enjoyed it.
I did.
Okay.
Yeah.
And Brad watched.
I stuck my hand in there twice for a good solid 5 minutes.
You're so brave, Brad. Yeah. You're so brave.
I don't know if bringing that up helps his story.
No. The fact that he like puffed his chest out whenever he said it was like far more impressive. So if I went to the gas station and got like 6 bags of ice for $3 a bag, could I turn my tub into an ice bath, or is there like a special thing
that would do it?
You could do it. I think might have used more than 6 bags worth of ice.
We did.
But
especially James. So James is I don't know, man, you're like a walking contradiction. Like, you're superhuman but also have like the most insane case of rheumatoid arthritis.
I put off a lot of heat. I can melt some ice.
Okay. I love that.
So
I love when a man takes pride in his ability to melt ice.
Yeah,
I love that.
And he also,
I'll call it a skill, I guess. I don't really know what else to call it.
Yeah, he also didn't shiver at all, and my little white pink body was just shivering the whole time, like a puppy that was shaved and then thrown into the coldest rushing river. That was me just, and James is just like stone cold, like super stoic, manly. It was beautiful. So, yeah.
It's a good time, guys.
Yeah.
It was, man.
So we did that today. So we've done hot springs baths together, and we've done cold baths together. So I guess we've run the gambit. Just no lukewarm ones. We don't want to be spit out of
God's
mouth.
What's the thing? We did an incredibly lukewarm. What was the one we did in Chattanooga? The salinity.
Oh, we did, yes.
The
amazing
salinity spa pool.
It was the body temperature salt bath.
You can't recreate that at home. It takes
one.
A good 300 pounds.
That has to be our next one. Yeah. Tepid baths.
Yeah. So it's called, what is it called? Serenity floating?
Flotation.
Yeah.
It's a sleep deprivation tank.
Yeah.
No, it wasn't. No, it wasn't at all.
Sleep deprivation is the opposite.
Right.
So it's waterboarding. No, I'm just kidding. Yeah. So it's whenever you...
Sensory deprivation is what you're talking about, I believe.
I was close. Yeah, I was close. So the water temperature was our body temperature.
Yeah, it was exactly body temperature, because she was like, you have to... So you're you're bare, and so you have to shower off first to make sure you're not, like, gross. And she's like, don't take too hot of a shower. And I was like, why? That's, like, the best shower. And she's like, well, you're going to be so cold because the temperature of the salt bath is literally just your body temperature. So, like, and you're in that sucker for an hour and a half, so.
And she said it was, like, what was it, like, 100 pounds it gets, of salt?
Yeah, you can't recreate that.
So you lay in, you float, and then you're supposed to lay there for 2 hours or whatever. I fell asleep, and you're butt naked, just floating there in water your own temperature, and you're just kind of like drifting in this. It's supposed to emulate the womb.
Well, and I feel like you're going to say a lot of things, but
no,
like...
No, but, well, what I was going to say...
hold on. But like, remember, you get in there, and she's like, so it's pitch black, and then there's like some sounds you can listen to if you want to in the tub.
It's like your mother's heartbeat.
And then, yes, like what... Well,
they have that
right?
on file.
I mean, that's what it felt like. Yeah. And then, but she, it's so dark that she's like, whenever you first start floating, you might want to tap the edges just to get your bearings. So you're like sprawled out and you're like, bink, bink. Like, I think I'm okay.
Yeah. It feels like you're either in a baby, like a baby in the womb, or you're lost at sea.
There he goes.
And, or a baby for whatever lost reason, at you're sea. Just bebop. Yes, you're a baby lost at sea in your mother's womb. And then, so I fall asleep, and then they say, like, this is supposed to be, like, so relaxing.
Yeah.
And then I got scared, and I woke up, and my head went under the water. It's like a 100 pounds of salt, so immediately my whole face is on fire because it's like I have, like, red eyes or whatever. And because I got turned around, I couldn't get out of the womb. So then I got really, really scared and started like tapping on it to get out.
Oh my gosh.
And when I finally got out, I was three times as stressed out as before I got in.
But they put a water bottle. They put a water bottle out right outside the door for that purpose, for like the people that, you know. I, however, never fell asleep, and I'm just sitting there counting minutes. And I thought I wasn't going to hear the ending music. I panicked. I was like, no one's going to tell me when to get out of here. And then someone's going to bust up in this room and I'm just going to die.
The That's apocalypse true. Happened also, while I was in here and no one will ever yes. rescue me. Yeah.
Yes.
Erin has yes. this reoccurring nightmare that she gets left behind
what?
In all
wait,
kinds
wait.
Of bathing situations. No, sorry.
No, I don't. Okay. No,
I
don't.
I had that like, all the time when I would wake up for church because I would normally go with my dad super early because he was on staff at a church. And so I would go at like 5 a.m. Yeah. to church on Sunday mornings. But if I didn't go with him, my mom wouldn't realize she was supposed to wake me up to make me go. And so I would wake up and no one was there. Immediately first, my first thought was always, well, rapture happened. I've been left.
Oh, yeah, left behind
Good
series
old Baptist
generation.
Kid.
Yeah, exactly. But no, that's definitely not that's not true for me, but I like your story. I Jeremiah was embellishing a good bit.
So being married to Erin, it's okay. One of my favorite things is that it's like constantly being in the room with a witness to the prosecution.
Well,
because if I make any joke that is seasoned, not doused in, just peppered in with a little embellishment, she's like, "Hey, can we start that story over from the beginning? This time, don't be a liar."
Yeah,
yeah, exactly.
So speaking of being a liar, how's marriage? this, like, legitimately, I'll expand on that question, but so I listened to y'all's last podcast that was on your free stream. And that was what really pushed me to talk to Brad, because Brad, weirdly enough, had like two life-size blow-up dolls made of y'all, and those dolls stay in his guest room. And yeah. I thought, how cool would it be for like Erin to see Brad's eyes when I finally told y'all what happened? And in case you're wondering if you made it.
I have no idea what he's talking about.
I am.
Just to be clear,
I'm lying.
I don't know
right
what he's
now.
Talking about.
He does not have
my
dolls.
Favorite thing about that is how on board I was with wherever you were going, and then you took that hard right, and I was just like, dude, I think everybody abandoned ship but you.
Abort.
Yeah, you had me questioning whether or not I actually have a blow up version of him in my house. I was like, do I?
Yeah, it's right next to his breastplate of righteousness, which they
That's
absolutely
right. Yes.
have.
Yeah. No, but in all seriousness, I talked to Brad. I was like, oh my gosh, I just heard this insane episode of Jeremiah and Erin just talking about like their 2020 recap, their plans for the future. Erin, obviously, like, you're super transparent about your health stuff. So like, number one, I was like, I love that. Like anybody who's authentic and can talk about blow up dolls to the band that they admire, like, you know, that's kind of like my speed.
Yeah.
So like that caught my attention and I was like, yep, we need to get them on. But then Jeremiah, you talked a little bit because Aaron made you brag and I appreciated that about the transformation that happened when y'all like are looking around, COVID has taken over the world. You're like, okay, we're in a pandemic. We're about to release an album. Oh my God, what are we gonna do? Can I figure this out like myself and run with it? And I kind of want to start with that for both of y'all. Like we're in March 2020. Y'all are ready to tour an album or about to tour an album. And like, what did you do? You know, like,
yeah, I think if I remember correctly, we canceled at least 40 shows. So in 2017 on our taxes, we had 150 shows logged for the year. And then that, I mean, that's kind of like just, that was normal to us. That's like what we thought. Every time you release an album, you tour it, you get out there, and that's how you sell records. And then in March, we released the last single before our album. So we had already released four of the songs off the album. And our label was like, hey, should we postpone this? Because it, you know, it was slated to come out in May. And I was just like, what are we postponing? Like, half of the album is out. Like,
yeah.
What are we waiting for? And whenever we released it, it was very clear that like, oh, there's a reason indie bands tour. Because it is not enough just to release to Spotify. That is not a livelihood by any means. So it became clear that if we could do it all over again, we just would have waited longer into the pandemic to release anything instead of being like, hey, here's everything now that we're all relearning how to be musicians.
Do you think so? But I don't know that we would have done that.
Okay.
Like, because, well...
Here comes marriage.
No. Like... Yeah, I can tell when fictional Aaron and Jeremiah are lying too. No, I, yeah, because like I remember March, that was whenever we all had the end date, right? Like we were all like April 30th, we're out of this thing, right?
This was in the, oh, this is a great vacation phase, yes, of COVID.
And yeah. If I could be totally honest, like I was so exhausted from traveling so much that I kind of welcomed like a couple weeks of nothing. And I was like, oh, cool. We'll just kind of pick back up after. And then it started slowly like ticking away after that. And I was like, oh, this is just not anything that we could have planned for. And so we were just like, let's just keep the release date. Because I think at that point we had decided like, oh, this is going to last a while. But yeah, April 30th was the end date. And then our album released on May 1st. So I don't know what we would have done.
Yeah, and it doesn't matter what we would have done had we known, because I remember my friend, we were in his living room, and he said, he was looking at the numbers in China whenever it was coming out, and he was like, dude, I'm actually like super worried about this, like, it's called COVID-19, and this was in December, and I was like, dude, you were like a hypochondriac, like, get over yourself. And I text him and remind him all the time, like, dude, anytime you get the sniffles, let me know. I'll believe you. Like, whatever you need, like, you should be running the government. But I just remember thinking, oh, we're just going to have to we're going to have to move these dates 2 months, and then we'll get to make our money back. We had 300 records sitting in our apartment. And, you know, Squid and the Whale, you play a show, people come up afterwards, that's where you sell your merch.
Right.
And we've had some good streams, we've had some good online sales or whatever, but it is definitely not the same thing. So I started feeling the same identity crisis that all of my musician friends were feeling, where it's like, do I even do this anymore? Like, the one thing I thought I would always get to do, worst case scenario, is play cover songs in a bar and be like, I can always have this. And even that got taken away. Because for whatever reason, like, there is no safe way to do our job at a level that makes sense for everyone involved. And I needed to find a different way to put that part of me into action. And that way was not live shows. It was recording music, because that is also a part of this process that I really love. And it's the part that I feel like I didn't get to see the full experience on with Joymonger, because we rushed to make that album, because we were like, we need to put something out. We need to get on the road. We need to do this. And then we put all of our eggs in that basket, and it was for nothing. Well, it wasn't for nothing, but it's hard to not feel that way now.
Yeah, because that album was like, we did Kickstarter. That was how we started it. And then we got a record deal in the middle of it. So there was so much more behind that than had ever been for us.
Yeah.
So right. Here we were sitting on so many, like we have so, I can't stress to you how many records we have in our closet right now. It's just so stressful.
Yeah.
And
so everyone that's listening, buy a record immediately. Is that what's happening?
I think that if you get nothing else from this, like that's what you need to say. Yeah.
Buy the freaking record. That is wild. I gotta throw it to Brad, because I know that Brad probably has a question that he would like to throw at you, and if not, then I'll keep digging a little bit deeper into this producer, this new hat that you're wearing, Jeremiah. But I wanted to make sure that Brad had at least 10 seconds to talk on this interview.
I mean, I know that I was able to, Jeremiah, check in with you. That was pretty early on, too. I think that was in April, May, because, again, that was back when there was end dates to all this stuff, and people were just kind of, like, freaking out a little bit because, you know, they weren't able to see their friends for a few weeks, and, you know, they felt lost and disconnected. But, like, I've always imagined that, you know, you always hear that creativity always comes out of bad situations. Did you find that, like, as this kind of wore on, maybe May, June, July, that creativity really started picking up based on kind of the life experience of what was happening? Or
no, I wouldn't say that's my experience. I love the songs that come from writers like Jeff Tweedy that are out of like addiction and suffering. I just can't write from that place. I wish I could. I feel like I had a really tough year even before the pandemic, and no songs about the tough parts came out, because it's just not a place I feel strong writing from. I would much rather make up stories, and like to me, I'm more interested in historical fiction than the actual history of a song. So that's the kind of place I come from. And from the pandemic, all I want to talk about is how lousy this has been. And I just don't want those to be the songs. But like every song in 2021, it's going to have some COVID in it. And like, we're about to send this new song off to get mixed, and it is 100% inspired by COVID. Wouldn't have happened if it wasn't for COVID. So like, it's in there. But it's definitely not something that I'm like, wow, I really see like the colors of my sorrow. Now I'm going to like dig. That's just
Okay. But whenever you write songs from my perspective, he does that.
Well, yeah.
Because that is my perspective.
Yeah. So Aaron is definitely the feely
the
one.
The sad
in the
one.
Group.
It's okay.
Yeah.
You can see it.
Yeah. Like if I walk in a room and Aaron is crying, that's like my first step to understanding the way she's feeling, because that's like, we're just getting started on the feelings wheel of how she's actually feeling, you know? Like if I'm crying, someone has died. That's just what happened.
Right.
But if Aaron's crying, it could be, like, I'll literally be like, why are you crying and standing over me like this? And she's like, I don't know yet.
Yeah.
It's just,
can I share a Christmas story? Is it too soon?
No, not at all. Bring it.
I don't know.
I know you're asking me, not your husband.
Thank you. I was actually. I promise this has a point. I'm just going to talk about my niece because I have to.
Oh, no.
But listen, so whenever I was like 20, I had this dream that I had a twin that was born 20 years later. Okay, work with me here. That really happened to me. And this twin, like everything that happened to me happened to her, and like I helped her through life, right? Weird dream. I was like, that was crazy. My sister has a kid. I think it's this kid. Okay. So she's basically me. How old are we? I don't know. Anyways, Addie and I like anytime she's going through something. She's five now. I'm like, okay, this is what's going on. Like, I tell her parents, hey, like, this is what she's feeling. They'll FaceTime me in the grocery store and be like, yo, she's crying. I don't know why. And I was like, that buggy next to you is being weird. Is it squeaking? And they're like, yes. And they're like, that's, and I was like, move away from the buggy. It's weird. Does that make any sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it sounds like you have a sixth sense. And please, let's stop talking about Oh Jeremiah, the band. And let's talk about this special ability that you have. Oh my God.
Just towards one person, though.
Just one person.
It's just for one person. It's excruciating.
It's really weird. But so I always wondered, like, oh, I wonder if she's going to be a feeler like me, like kind of like a crier, or is this just like, you know, like toddler stuff? And so for Christmas this year, I got my sister and my mom this necklace, but like individualized to them. Like, there's a local company in Athens that does like, you can like customize what it says on it, whatever. And I have one, and I wear it like almost every day. And so we're opening up gifts, and my family really milks it. Like, if you're opening a gift, like, everyone's watching you. You better like really ham it up and just have a great time. And so my sister goes to open hers, who is Addie's mom, and it has, I got her initials like Alex and then her husband Rob. So it just had like a little dainty A and R on it. Well, Addie is standing right behind her, and she she sees it, and my sister explains what the letters are for. And she gets so overwhelmed and starts like, she like starts smiling and then she starts crying. And we're like, oh, she's just like wants one or something. And then she just goes, oh, I'm not sad. I'm really happy. And then she goes, this is an emotion I've never felt before. And so then, of course, yeah, to articulate that is insane. And so then, of course, I'm crying at that point. My mom goes to open hers. Hers is a necklace that says, like, loved on it. And Addie recognizes the wrapping from the previous box and is like, oh, is this another necklace? And she gets worked up. And then she's like, it says what on it? And then she gets the overwhelmed feeling again. And so then we're all just kind of, like, laughing. But also, like, this kid is, like, for real experiencing something new. And we're, like, here for it. And then so I, like, go to, like, hug her. And I'm crying. I'm like, it's okay. Like, I do this too. Like, I get so happy that I cry sometimes. And then she pulls away and she sees my necklace and she's like, is that from the same company?
Oh my gosh.
And she just can't handle it. So,
and I'm just standing there waiting to open a present. Yeah. And no one will give me a present. No one will say, you can open your present now.
No. So, anyways, you could say I'm a feeler in a lot of ways.
Yeah, for sure. And I am cursed of being an eternal optimist, which has served me well, which is why we've made it almost 9 years doing this. But in the pandemic, there was a specific time I remember. It was like June, whenever, because, you know, everybody thought that, oh, in the summer, things will go a little bit back to normal because the virus doesn't like the heat or whatever. And things just never got even close to normal. And I remember hearing myself, like, try to spin it. Like, I'm looking for the silver lining on why this is good news. And I hear myself and I annoy myself. And I'm like, dude, shut up. Like, this sucks for everybody. And then I spent like the next 2 months being miserable to be around because I did not have that darling that kept me going of like looking for the silver lining. This is why this is good news, whatever. Because COVID is not good news. There's no way to look at it positively. Even if you think it's fake, even if you think it's super serious, there's no way to look at it and be like, oh, that's how this was good. And I've used optimism to get me through our career. And that's whenever it broke for me. And I was like, I have to relearn how to survive because I can't do that thing anymore.
Yeah.
And it's so.
Well, I don't think I was articulating what I kind of meant. I remember when we talked, you were, I think when I said, what do you think you're going to do? I think you said write a novel. You were wanting to write a book. And I more meant things like that. Like, I guess I should have phrased it like innovation tends to come from times like this.
Yes.
And that's what I meant of the things tend to just kind of come out of these situations that would have never been there. I remember hearing some of the things that came out of 2008 and 2009 after the housing crisis because people were shut down and there were so many things going on. And then all these like tech companies started and all these things happened. So I'm sorry, I didn't articulate that well, but that's no, kind of more that, what I meant out of all of this.
So that I love, and I did misunderstand you. So I did at the beginning of this, I was going through all the stages of grief that you can go through.
Yeah.
Like there was denial, there was anger, there was 100% like bargaining. And I really did think like, oh, this is going to be my chance to write a novel. I'm going to get to become a poet, all these like lavish things.
We made we had a big poster board in our living room that we just wrote down like goals and what we were going to accomplish during all of it. And you didn't like put write a novel, but you definitely were working on it a lot.
Yeah. I think the thing that I kept beating my head up against was the lie that, oh, it's going to go back to normal. When I go back to normal, am I going to be pursuing this novel or do I want to go back to music? And then I think I started looking for those things of like, where does my creativity need to live during this? Because it's like a, you know, it's like I turned the valves off and they just started like backing up. And it was like, I was uncomfortable just carrying it around with me. And that's how I found producing. Because that's whenever like, it didn't feel like I was irrationally trying to get a new thing. It felt like, oh, this is what the thing is now. Like it was such a natural progression of, I have all this stuff. Like, we need to just start making our music in our apartment. And all those same feelings of whenever I started falling in love with performing and writing songs came to me in producing, because I would wake up thinking about like, oh, what if I tried this for the intro? Or what if I did all these things? So it definitely gave way for new creativity in a way that I never would have gotten to do before pandemic, because it's really hard to be bad at something as an adult. Like, have you ever played golf like for the first time at like 30? It's miserable because you have to suck for 4 hours in front of all your friends and it's miserable and you don't get better and then you leave feeling awful. That's a lot like learning a new thing, like producing at 30, because I would have given up in June if I had the option. But I had nowhere to go. No studios are open. Like it wasn't available to me. So I had to just keep showing up, being bad, like hitting golf ball after golf ball in the studio until at one point I was like, I actually like love doing this now. And that wouldn't have happened had I had any other outlet, because I would have found an escape had it been available to me. But COVID took all of them away.
So as you were talking about with not knowing when things are going to go back or if things are going to go back and what areas things have shifted, that's something that David and I talked about some in thinking about this, with you having learned how to do some of your own producing and all of that, is like, I know in like the world of voiceover and a lot of things where people have normally go into a studio and record, people have had to make spaces in their own homes to do that now. And so how much do you think, like, post-COVID, things will transfer over to doing that, to where now there's not as many people going into studios, so those are going to be so expensive, so people won't be able to? Is this, like, the death of the studio?
I don't think it's the death of the studio, because I think that Adele will always need a place to, like, be Adele, right? You know? But, like, when you watch the Taylor Swift Long Pond sessions, you're like, oh, if she's doing it, like, this is for real gonna, because, you know, she turned her home into a recording studio.
Yeah.
I mean, granted, she had Aaron Dessner at his studio and Jack Antonoff at his studio helping.
Right.
But technology's so good. All it takes is, are you willing to, like, show up and be bad at it until you're not bad?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because, like, I honestly, like, I did not have this in me until I, like, just started honing in parts of my brain that I never use. Like I don't use the analytical side of my brain nearly as much as I should. But I do think it's going to make a really hard case to get us back into a studio. For example, we went to the studio to finish up a song because I really wanted to record on this one microphone. I had it built up in my mind. Like, the song will feel real to me when I do this one microphone.
Well, and you wanted an out. Like, you yes. were, if it's okay to say, like, you, he
well,
got,
I mean, you already said it in the recording.
Yeah,
so.
sorry. Well, he was coming to that place where he was hitting a wall with this song. And so I think he wanted he was like, well, if I book studio time, then I'll be fine. Like, if I have that on the calendar, that's my, I don't want to say like escape, but that kind of became your like saving grace of like, I'm going to be fine because I am going to finish it here.
Yes.
But then.
So we show up. It's expensive. We have to do the whole day rate because you can't do hourly in COVID. You have to wear face masks the whole time. Only one person can be in the room at a time. It did not feel like a studio experience.
Well, and the talkback mic wasn't working, so you would sing a take and just look at the person through the window and be like, was that, what do you need? Like, you had to like...
So we go in, we record the vocals, we do it on a U67, like one of the old vintage ones from like the 60s or whatever. And I'm like, wow, I'm like unstoppable. I can't believe I did it so good.
This is our new normal. Like,
this is our new normal.
We're
going to
do like a demo version at our place and then drive a mile down the road and then do the rest here.
And then we send the song off and the mixing engineer is like, hey, you need to redo these vocals. There's a wicked buzz in it. And I was like, there's no way. There's no way that happened. So it just man. What I learned through COVID, so like every one of my musicians' friends, we all had to get day jobs. We don't like to talk about it because we like to feel like we're these cool, hip musicians. I got a day job, and my first week at it, I realized how screwed up the music industry is because I have a boss that wants to pay me money and wants to make sure I'm happy at my company. And he says, oh, do you need something? I will buy that for you. And whenever I got those tracks back, I was like, musicians are always going uphill. No one is helping us ever. And that's why whenever we started the studio, I was like, I need to get to where I have the mic that I want to sing on, where I have all the instruments that I need, because I'm going to go into the studio and there's going to be a buzz in the microphone. Like, it's like survival of the fittest, which is how we got here anyway, but it just looks so much different. But it's the same thing. It's the same problem we've had. Mm-hmm. It's just now it's based on it. Now it's everywhere, you know?
Yeah. I know that for me, I find the art of making something fascinating to the point that I will watch literally every music documentary there is. I don't even care if I like the band. I think that the process of making the album is fascinating, and the process of making film. I would watch Inside the Actor's Studio all day long if it was on, because the headspace that they get into, the thought process that they get into, and you know, for instance, it's not a Blink-182 reference, but it's a Boxcar Racer, so close enough.
I'll know
ding,
it.
Ding, ding.
But you know, you hear them take a sip, kids.
That is our drinking game. Yeah. Drink.
No, I love that.
But you know, you listen to them talk about that record, and one of the things that I picked up on firsthand was how they were experimenting with dynamics. And specifically with drum dynamics, to the point that they would record the quiet parts of a song with a very tiny drum set in a small room with maybe one mic or you know, a distant mic or something like that. And then for the big chorus parts, they would have full drums with full mics in a, you know, beautiful studio room that was just big and booming. And I just find that, you know, the fact that somebody would sit there and think, oh, hey, you know, I can take this small drums, put this thing on here, I just find absolutely fascinating. So, you know, the art of creating something out of this and producing the record is just another facet that I think will just bring out, you know, so many cool things. So I'm excited to hear that you're doing all of that. I knew you had recorded a few things at your house. I didn't realize you were full-fledged doing
that. So on our last record, Joymonger, we did My Baby Jimmy and Me in our apartment. We did The Spell in our apartment. Was there another one we did? I can't remember. So I'd done it before. We did a Christmas song in our apartment before, and that was me just being like, oh, this is fun. But there was a huge brain shift of like, what if I like took this really seriously? Because we weren't expecting My Baby Jimmy and Me to make the record. Like, it was just like this is fun. And it was the first single off the record. We were just having fun. And it started being serious whenever I decided, like, what if this became how I got all this frustration out. What if I put it all in this place? And that also made me realize, going back to why I went to that other studio, I'm terrified of being alone when it comes to the creative process. Because just like COVID, when the thing you use to defend yourself gets taken from you, who are you then? And when I'm alone in the studio, I feel so afraid that I'm going to make the wrong decision, and then it's going to be all my fault. And when you listen to like Boxcar Racer, you got Travis Barker on drums. It doesn't matter how cool you record the drums. They're going to be good because Travis Barker's on the drums. But I don't feel that way about myself.
Right.
So if I'm in the studio and I'm the guy doing all the stuff, I have no faith in myself yet that that's going to, and the only way you get over that is you show up, you be bad, and then you, until that turns into something better.
You wouldn't have said yet like 3 months ago.
Wait, what did I say yet to?
What did you say yet to? Uh-oh. It was important.
Oh, I don't feel that way about myself yet.
There it is.
Okay, cool. Yeah, and Erin even brought out, because we are married and she knows me better than I do in most things, she said, I feel like 2 weeks ago you had a shift to where this stopped being miserable, because there was a minute where it made me miserable trying to be good at this. Just like when I played golf with my friends and he would show up and he'd be like, no, this is how you swing. And then he would watch me totally go off into the woods. And then he would have to smile and he would have to lie to me and go, that was better. And then we would go to the next hole and it'd be terrible. You know, like it's tough to do the same thing over and over and not get better at it.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you stopped wanting to buy gear.
Yeah, because that's another thing.
That's
about
my marker for he's believing in himself.
Yeah, I don't know how much. I mean, I know y'all are big Enneagrammers, but I don't know how much your audience cares about it. But I'm a 7, and that's one of the things that we do when we get stressed is we like try to buy things to like overcome our stress. And I finally stopped buying a bunch of stuff. I mean, I did just buy a new bass guitar, not to brag, but
what'd you get?
I got a Fender American Mustang.
What? Dude,
yeah.
Nice
so,
purchase,
and that's because I don't own a bass, so I need a bass for the studio. So, but it's not like I need a fancy ribbon mic to replace this less fancy ribbon mic. It's nothing like
that's
that.
That's what it was before.
Yeah, that's what it was before.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know my husband is in stress when.
Yeah. And something new. No doubt. When Amazon shows up at our house.
So, well, yeah.
All right. So I want to shift. And obviously be considerate of y'all's time. I know that you slotted at least 3 hours for this. So
yeah, this is like a Dave Matthews concert. We just go until we're finished, right?
Yeah, yeah. We're not gonna stop. So
we haven't even gotten into the jam band section of the show yet.
Right. They're still doing the new stuff. That's full what it was on the record.
That's how most people describe our podcast. Is it's basically just a Dave Matthews concert.
Ooh. Yeah, so. Yep. That's
people
in your description. I read it.
And get in the bat and on the hill.
Yeah, that's a new shirt idea. So everything is okay. Just like a Dave Matthews concert.
Sadly, that means my wife wouldn't listen to this anymore.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Our wives do tell us that they listen, but we'll see. So straight up though, one of the things that we focus on obviously with our podcast is relationships, and y'all are supposedly married and also work together, also went through COVID together, but for some reason it seems like y'all are like relatively happy, and I think it's just impressive to me. I told James earlier, and I'm sure Hannah will hear this, but like if Hannah and I have to work on something together, it works for about 45 seconds, unless it's our children. Like, we're really good with the kids, but like if we're like, all right, we need to hang these blinds, right? I'm like, either I do it or you do it, because we can't both do it together. And like, I'm married to an Enneagram 4, which Erin, you sound like a 4. I'm assuming you are, but maybe you're not.
She gets that a lot, but she's not.
I get that a lot.
Okay. Story's ruined. All right, podcast is over.
No, it's okay.
No, she is a 9.
I'm a 9, but I get typed as a 4 all the time.
She's also
Would Dave Matthews give up on this?
No, Dave Matthews wouldn't. All right. Saxophone solo! Saxophone! All right, so you're a 9. Okay, so you can tap into all the numbers. Awesome. That's lovely. And you see both sides of the coin, right? You're very good at seeing all that. Basically, how are y'all functioning? We're all married. What are y'all doing? That's so much time. That's so much time with the person that you adore and that you love, but also you're going through stress. Your identity is in your music, and COVID hit, which to me is so big to have the rug pulled out of the main source of, maybe not the main source, but one of the major sources of identity. And then you're still married at the end of the day. Yeah. What's going on with that?
Do you want to take it?
Yeah, I think Aaron should. I'm tired of hearing Jeremiah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Me
That's
too,
okay.
man.
That's,
start with that.
Start with that.
I can't.
Well, I will say we do have our things that we have to do alone. It's not like at one point we tried working out together and we're like, that's too far. It's too far. So, we definitely have our interests alone. I also will say, as much as music is such a big part of my life, I mean, it's been a big part of my life since I was a kid, I don't find a lot of identity in the work I do with it, which I think is one of the reasons why we can be in a band together, is that he finds most of his identity in that, I would say. It's kind of had to shift this year, but he finds most of his identity in that way, and I don't. So that can be really troublesome whenever, you know, he wants to, if something's going wrong in the band, he wants to say it's, oh, you don't care enough about it. Like, I'm the one that cares more about it. You don't care enough about it. But I think that if we both cared about it in the same way, in the same magnitude, it wouldn't look great. I think it would be a little scary. And maybe it works for some people, but there's just a level of that. Something that I have is like, we're fine with or without it, but I love that we have it. And I want to do what I can to keep it in our lives. But I think he's more along the lines of like, if I don't have this, you know, and my brain doesn't go there. I kind of find, I don't know, I think I find a lot of identity in just relationally and just like awareness in so many different ways. But and we're coming up on our 5-year anniversary, like in 2-ish weeks or so. And it is bizarre to think that because we've been together for like almost 9 years now, and
pretty inseparable from the jump.
From the very beginning. And he also, like, we started dating as soon as we started rehearsing together. Like, everything happened at once. And then he got the West Nile virus and like had to take care of him for a couple of weeks. Didn't really know if he was going to make it at the end of his bout of that. Met his family really soon. It was like just a lot of, it just happened like super fast. And we talked about marriage whenever we first started dating. Like, we kind of knew we were it, but we didn't want to get married. My parents had divorced like a year before that. And so like to have parents that were married for 26 years and then suddenly that be over, I was just like, I don't want anything to do with that because everything feels false and who am I? So whenever I met Jeremiah, it was kind of like, oh crap, he's it, you know, and I don't want this right now. Yeah. Like, I was a little irritated because I just didn't, you know. He's my best friend, though. Like, we say that all the time, jokingly, but, like, we'll just randomly be like, hey, you're my best friend.
I will say, I think that we do a really good job of being honest with where we're at. Like, I'm a bather, so I was taking a bath. And the door
was
open.
It's full circle.
You're a bather?
Oh, I am 100% a bather. I'm also a bidet-er.
Okay,
nice.
You're recording this, right?
Yeah.
Tell the people.
I mean, baths are the bidet of bathing.
Oh, I bathe in a bidet. Sorry, this is derailing. So I stand back. I'm bathing. This happened right before we podcasted. Started this podcast. I was taking a bath. The door was open. She's eating tuna salad on the couch, and I call out to her. I feel insecure about the thing I'm about to send off, and she's got a mouthful of tuna, and she's like, "Do you want to talk about it?" And I was like, "Yes." So then she comes in, hands me a tangerine, and then we talk about her feelings.
But like he leaves the bathroom door open, like, and I can tell he wants to like talk. Like if the door's open, he's like, "Can we like talk?" You know, or he'll like yell at me from the other room, and I'll be like, "Listen."
I like the idea that all of your serious talks start with one of you handing the other a tangerine.
Yeah. Oh yes, in the bathtub. In
obviously.
Yes.
Yeah, and also at the beginning, I mean. It's no surprise to anyone. Jeremiah is like extroverted. I'm super introverted. So the beginning of COVID hit, and the thing I had that bugged me for the first like month, I was like, "Can you not announce yourself every time you come back into the room?" Because he would just be like,
"Hey, what's he say?"
Just like, "Hey," you know. You can picture living with Jeremiah is exactly what you think it is, and he's just like. I caught him on video once, and I hope I still have it. I was like sitting on the couch, and he just like he's like, "Oh, you're awake!" And he just like every time, every time. Yeah,
I think I just fell in love with your husband a little bit. That's adorable.
Yeah.
Oh, you're awake.
I do. I do think this is going to be. Give a disclaimer. This next sentence is going to be gross. I am constantly in awe of my wife. Like I do. I think it helps a lot because like. I come from a family tree of bad marriages, like, and I grew up, my friend's parents had bad marriages. I remember I was in the room when my friend heard his mom hooking up for the first time with a different person. Like, I remember growing up and thinking, oh, marriage is temporary.
Oh,
and,
wow.
And my parents are still together, and the stuff that I've seen them go through, I know that I have been given the gift of staying. Like, I know that I'm in it. And knowing that that's where the sentence ends. That's the period at the end of the sentence. You will stay. It makes it so much easier to take inventory and then take action because you know what's not on the table. Mm-hmm. So how do we get to you will stay and that be good news? So that's 100% how we kind of like, we never even joke about divorce because it had such a whole huge toll on our lives. Right. Mm. But it really does help that she's literally my favorite singer. That is not something I just say to her. Like she's literally my favorite singer. The way that she does with people, like there was one time I can give you an example. We were talking to a friend and we left the friend and she said, "I think that she's upset and I think she's upset at us." And I was like, "What? I'm drunk. We're a party. What are you talking about?" And then the next time we saw her, the girl said, "Hey, I'm really upset with y'all." And like, I just wish that I had that sort of empathy. Like she can read minds in that way. Like, and all those things, I just like am constantly in awe of her where, yeah, I want to take you to the fanciest restaurant in town, but I also want to put on PJs and watch Cobra Kai with you and not talk. Like it's marriage can be fun and it was something I never wanted, but it's still so much better.
When we would tour, like whenever our relationship first started, we went for our first like big tour the next summer. And, cause we'd be on the road together for like a month at a time. And it was like us and like three other dudes. And that's like, you're instant roommates with whoever you tour with. And so I never really thought twice of it though, but he would drop me off. And then he'd go home and then he'd call me and be like, "Hey, do you want to hang out?" So like we're always together. And I like the idea of that has always been prior to marriage was always like so scary because I never wanted to be dependent on anyone else. Mm-hmm. And because I always I think almost losing him at the beginning of the relationship and it being like so serious. I think I always have my biggest fear is always like, I mean, I know it's most people, but like I would think about losing him like way too much whenever we first got married. That would be something I would just obsess over. And it was like the result of like, I just have like so many sleepless nights, just like worrying about it, just like constantly thinking about it. And so I just never want to, so I'd always like try to resist the whole, like, we hang out together all the time and we do everything together. But I think over the last couple of years, I've just kind of leaned into it and be like, yeah, like we are always together and like, and it's fine. Yeah. We'll be okay.
Yeah.
Well, we also learned the best advice that I would give to another couple. This would be my last thing on this, okay. Is to argue sitting down. That helped us a lot too.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah.
Yeah. Because
I always heard argue naked. Because it's hard to get that mad, yeah, that's funny. When you're arguing.
No, because she won't hear my points if she sees.
Ah, you know, I got you.
How about that bod? How about that bod? Yeah.
Yeah.
But
I've been working out.
Whenever we would start arguing and we realized that we were way more productive when we were both seated and calm and on the same team. But when we stood up, we'd get each other worked up and then we'd get.
Well, and we always. I think from the start, because of my parents' divorce and because of like other things that we had seen, we had agreed we're always going to communicate. Like, and I know that's like such an obvious thing, but we literally, if Jeremiah says something offhanded on stage sometime and I'm just like, yo, I hate, like, you totally disrespected me and how you said that, like, I'll call him out in between songs. Like, I'll pretend like I'm tuning, but I'm really like, yo, that was terrible. Like, I'm really irritated with you. I don't know if that's the right thing to do, but like, we never let time. I try not to let any time pass of like, I never want to hold a grudge against him. Yeah. And like, I want our time together to be right. And I don't want to just be thinking about something that I'm mad at that he said. So like, we address it like instantly. And for me, that works. And I think for you, that works. But
What I find so interesting too is that I think that dynamic works so well for you guys on stage, because I think that different people will identify with the two of you differently, but they both are connecting. So for example, I'm also extroverted. So Jeremiah, I think that your extrovertedness is really cool and how you interact with the people around you. And it feels like I've seen you a few times now. So it doesn't feel like I'm watching you necessarily. I feel like we're kind of hanging out and you just happen to be playing songs. This is the way I get it. Now, my wife is also a 9 and also introverted, and she identifies with Aaron very much and likes to watch Aaron because of how you are, because she identifies with your personality and how you, and she also will throw quips at me when I have messed up in the whatever I've said offhand.
The
art of conversation. And I also think that one of the things, it's very healthy, because I was identifying with what you were saying just a second ago of, you know, how it means a lot to Jeremiah, and it doesn't mean, it means a lot to you, but not, like, it's not everything to you. And I remember that I had to make a very conscious decision when I first got married to Megan of, I need to decide before I ever say anything, because I talk my feelings out and she analyzes first. I have to decide really quickly if this is my hill to die on. And if it's not, if I determine real quickly that I really don't care that much about it, then I'm not even going to say anything, because it doesn't really matter to me. And when I made that determination, it really helped us move forward, because I cared that she cared and I didn't really care that much about it. So I was like, okay, well, yeah, that's just going to make you happy. Mm-hmm. Sure. I'm in. Let's do this thing. But she has what she's passionate about and I have what I'm passionate about, and it just, you know, it works. So I think I do love that the dynamic works for the different types of people. And I've witnessed it with the different people that I've seen come to your shows and who they identify with and all of that, you know. Not to blow smoke or anything, but...
Not to blow up a blow-up doll or anything.
There it is. But yeah, because sometimes you don't know if pride is in the way until you have that check-in, because it started in the studio, because... not very often, but occasionally we'll butt heads on what we think should go in a song. And so we had to be like, hey, on a scale of 1 to 10, how strongly do you feel about this? And if he's just like, oh, I'm just like a 4 five, six. Like, I'm not anything major. I just thought it was cool. And I was like, oh, well, I feel strongly. I'm like a 9 on this. And so then we were like, oh, maybe we should incorporate that in like our relational, like just our life of like, is this pride or is this, are you just trying to be right? Or do you really care about this thing that you're fighting for?
James, are you in a relationship?
I am.
What do you think about what they're saying?
It's all crap.
Yeah.
No, I'm just kidding.
It's, you don't like it?
No, I mean, it's, I do think picking your battles is very important and just finding ways that, that your relationship works. And I think, in finding out for y'all that sitting down, helps when having disagreements, I feel like it's really important to, even if it's not the natural state of either of you, to figure out what works and what doesn't when you're arguing or when things are going well or whatever. If you need a tangerine, if you need to tune your guitar, whatever it is,
you know,
like just figuring out those things, I think is really important to take the time to put in that work of even in the midst of like, I'm upset right now, being able to think through even afterwards, when was I hearing this person? When was I not? Like that sort of thing. I think that's one of the good things that I hear y'all talking about is that it seems like you've worked through those, like what is beneficial in these different moments. And I think that's super important. Yeah.
So
I love that.
Yeah. Just to wrap up, I wanted to give y'all a chance, just to kind of work through what Jeremiah has done wrong today. On mic in front of everybody. No, I want people.
This is the airing of grievances.
Yeah, the airing of grievances.
Part of our Dave Matthews concert is the airing of grievances.
So we've played y'all's music on this podcast more than we want to admit. It's a little embarrassing, but it has everything to do with that guy. But I do want people to bring home your shirts, your records, everything that they can. I think. Most of us have, we may all have your shirts. I definitely have a couple of your records, but tell us a little bit about like what you're excited about on how people can connect to y'all through, y'all do Patreon, if I'm remembering correctly. Obviously you guys have your website, but yeah, talk a little bit about that as we wrap up.
I would say the thing that we have found that is the most helpful way to support a band you love is Patreon, because
or podcast
every other I would say
or a podcast
well I'm getting there, I promise. I would say financially the music industry is upside down in every way. Patreon seems expensive because it's the only thing that's practical for the band right out of the gate. Everything else is an investment that most likely will not pay off. Mm-hmm. Like, if you watched the flow of an album get made, it would be a miracle if the band breaks even. But Patreon gives you a way to, like, help a band stay afloat. So every month, our Patreon money goes into recording. So it's like, it is the most money we can count on every month that is gonna be there. The way to get to know us the best would be our podcast, which is part of Patreon, but we do it publicly. We have like extra content for the podcast on Patreon.
Yeah, we started releasing them weekly to the public now. And then we're going to start doing a couple of things exclusively to Patreon this year that I'm going to be more involved with. Like we talked about like my health journey and stuff. And I think, we're going to do like I want to just do like my, like a verbal health diary every mm-hmm. month, and just kind of like a check-in of like how I'm processing, like what new emotions and, things that I'm learning through it, because the educational part of what I'm going through is really fascinating to me. And I just want a chance to verbalize it and just kind of like remember where I am through all of it. And so that's going to be a new thing on Patreon this year that I'm really excited about.
Yep. Very cool.
And so our podcast is called Oh Jeremiah Talks. It's basically, we call it marriage counseling because once a week we sit in front of each other and we talk about our feelings for an hour.
Well, the first, yeah, I incorporated, we at the start of every episode, we do a feelings wheel. We try to guess how the other one is feeling.
But we also talk
but
about.
But then it, sometimes it goes, sometimes that takes up the whole episode if it needs to. And then sometimes it doesn't.
But it's mostly talking about stuff that we love. Like, we try to talk about a music thing. We try to talk about a TV or film thing.
Yes.
Like, we just watched The Queen's Gambit, and that'll probably be this week's episode.
And like, we have to, like, watch each other's favorite. Like, he had to watch a few episodes of Gilmore Girls. Or, like, he watched... listen. Oh. Oh, no.
Just and then, hours of fast talking. Yes. No emotions. Just fast talking. What's the worst?
I love that you two are continuing this, but her eyes got very serious when you did that.
Listen, I was very serious.
My wife loves it as well.
Wife has stared daggers at me while I talk about it, and it has not stopped me. So,
oh, it's so good. It's listen, and you probably know, you're probably curious about what really did happen to her, so let's just move on. We try to rotate something that one of us is really into, one of us isn't really, but then we'll find something that we watch together on accident that's like awesome, and we'll discuss that. That's been fun. We kind of narrowed it down because the podcast was a little bit more broad, but then now we're kind of like, okay, these are the bullet points that we talk about, but always feelings wheel.
Yeah.
Is there?
And then we have obviously a merch store at ojeremiah.com where you can like buy t-shirts and albums or whatever.
Specifically vinyl, just a lot of those.
Yeah. And it's for the album Joymonger that we released in May. Yeah. And it feels like it was an eternity ago because it just went so upside down from what the plan was. But I would say the thing that I'm most excited about is, I mean, like every artist, it's releasing new music, and it's one of those things where my expectations are so low now because of the Joymonger release. There was this moment with Joymonger where I was so just like pouty and bummed, and our friends were like, hey, are you free on Friday when your album comes out? And we're like, yeah, our tour got canceled. Obviously we're free.
Yeah.
And they came and they picked us up and they took us, all of our friends arranged like a little Joymonger parade of like, there were like six different locations and they were all playing the record.
They had like our friend that's like does calligraphy. Like she drew this homemade like map and it was called the Joymonger Tour. And it was like socially distanced. It was like, that was number 15 was the number of people you can have like out at a gathering. Yeah. So it was like 5 to 15 people at each location, and they all had like gifts and stuff for us. And it was like 6 proposals. I was like weeping. My students were there with their violins. They had learned something new for me. I was just like sobbing. Man. It was very intense.
But that's awesome. That was the thing that happened that made me go, I need to determine what success is in a different way.
Yeah.
Like I need to re-identify how success affects me and what I call success, because that whole tour got canceled, but I will never forget that, you know?
Yeah.
So when we start releasing music, it's going to be more about like the journey of the way we do it now, the relationship we have to music. And it's basically like, we've made it this far. Like I remember when I turned 28, that's whenever it stopped being cool to be a musician again, because like all my friends started getting real jobs, and like your parents are like supportive when you're 23. And then when you're 27, they're like, wait, are you still doing this?
It's because they're like, whenever you're in your 20s, they're like, oh, you're still in your 20s. So I'm so glad you're like doing that right now. That's what we always hear.
And
they don't say that, but they can't say that anymore.
But yeah. And now I'm 30, but like, there's way too many reasons to not do this. Like, you don't have to list them. I know them.
Yeah.
Like, what is interesting to me and what I'm here for is how I can keep this going, however it has to be. If that's me getting to do it one day a week on the internet, that's fine. Like, I showed up to be a lifer in this.
You set some lofty goal. Like, we were, like, talking through goals and stuff yesterday with the podcast and music, and I think you said you wanted to record 50 songs this year?
No, I wanted to write 50 songs
this year. Write 50 songs. Listen. Whoa. That just overwhelms me from the... I don't even know. But yeah, you're excited. You're super excited though.
Yeah. Because I signed up for this like... And it's just never... I've never not wanted to do this. It's just... this is the way it's going to look until it can go back to the way that I like it to look, you know?
this is the way.
This is it.
Did y'all catch that
Disney Mandalorian.
Mandalorian reference? Okay.
No, sorry.
Y'all.
We haven't seen the new. I haven't seen the new season yet. Listen. Here, okay. This is what
we smashed all of Cobra Kai.
We smashed all of
Queen's Gambit.
But listen, I really loved The Last Jedi. Okay. No, no. Do not. I'm not interested in your hot take.
Jeremiah.
No hot takes.
And
no
here's
hot
why.
Takes.
Here's why. Star Wars fans ruined Star Wars for me.
Oh, here we go. Okay.
And I can't.
Okay,
it's
so
the
this
only
is
going to
be Patreon only. Subscribers are going to get to hear what Jeremiah is about to say.
Every other
and Jeremiah.
Every other bath, he goes on this rant.
Dude,
from every the other room. Bath, yeah.
Aaron, get in here and scrub my back while I tell you about the Star Wars fans.
Bring the tangerines. Yeah, it's. I will get to the second season of Mandalorian. I liked the first season, and the biggest highlight for me is the fact that Bill Burr is in it.
Yes.
Like, that was amazing to me.
That was an interesting
And I know
casting.
He's in season two.
Yeah, he is.
I know he's in season two, so I will definitely watch it. I'm still butthurt from all of the arguments with Star Wars people I accidentally got into from that era. So,
those bastards. Okay, y'all, it's been great. Thank you so much for your time. We all love you.
Yeah.
And
yeah, we love y'all. This is cool. Thanks for letting us do this.
Dude, absolutely. We love you both. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having us.
Yes.
Yeah, hopefully we'll be back in Hattiesburg as a unit and we can do one of these in person. That would be dope.
Yay.
Yeah, for sure.
Yay. All right. Y'all have a lovely night, okay?
Yeah, we love y'all. See you soon.
Bye.
Well, guys, that's our episode. Thank you so much to Aaron and Jeremiah for joining us on this episode. It was such a delight to get to talk to you and to get to catch up with where you guys are. Guys, I have a challenge for you. This has been a challenging year for so many different industries. You probably already know about the local businesses, local restaurants, but one that you may not be thinking of is the local musician. In this episode, they mentioned the fact that they have a closet full of their new record, Joymonger, that did not get to go out to the masses because of this pandemic. They did not get to travel around, meet all of you, and sell you their merchandise. Let's remedy them of that. Guys, go out, buy their record, buy their CD, buy their merchandise. Let's show them how much you care about them and help to support them to bring you new music over the course of the next years. We are the same way. We have a Patreon page. As you can tell, we do not have any sponsors. So for as little as $1 a month, maybe $5 if you can afford it, you can help us buy little things like mic cords and other things like that. And we will bring it to you. This year, we're going to be bringing additional content. Every guest that we have, we ask a couple additional questions that'll only go out to Patreon. James's Calls with Kyle will be on there more regularly. And there are going to be more surprises over the course of the year. We will make it worth your while. So if you have any additional money, we would be greatly appreciative if you would throw it towards our Patreon. You can find us on Facebook. You can find us on Twitter. You can find us on Instagram. And guys, we love you. We love to have a conversation with you, and we look forward to hearing from you. So on behalf of James Eisenhower and David Meggs, I'm Brad Stair. Everything will be okay, people. With a backward
in me who's lost in space. This world will spin you away if you let it. Maybe I was made with a backwards heart. And choose you.